Blog Talk Radio.
It's going to kind of bring in some cooler temperatures and cooler weathers. I should say, and I'm not ready for summer yet. Looking at the calendar, I don't have much of a choice. We're going to move into September, and soon, very soon, it will be cool. I try not to think about that. I want to enjoy the remainder of days we have here summer. It seems like it's going by kind of quick. We've been kind of doing early this time around the year. We've kind of doing a show, take a week off, and kind of back. And what show y'all be asking? Oh. When Black Men Talk. I am Mark Hiller, soon to be joined by Mr. Maurice and Mr. Charles, but we've got to take some time to ourselves throughout the summer, and kind of, I guess, we've doing some of that. Hopefully, we've ourselves. I'm bringing in a little bit. Hopefully, we've done something to kind of basically restore and enjoy themselves. But we're going to pick back up, and we're going to do a show this evening. We're going to go on a two-week break. We're going to come back and start our weekly routine starting in September 19th. And at that point, we'll probably go from week to week with shows. Looking forward. I want to basically speak on something, a phrase that we don't basically hear anymore. And it's a simple phrase. It's a phrase that just kind of basically eludes us from time to time. The phrase is a character of a man. And that's a phrase from underground that just kind of doesn't, I don't hear that anymore. I kind of basically hear different things about the man, but I don't hear the word character. Mr. Reese is here. That's something that he hears often. Mr. Reese, the phrase character of a man, is that something that kind of comes to your ear from time to time?
No, not too often anymore. If you meet quality people that are trying to get in your life, you will hear that. But for the most part, society has kind of gone away from, to me, in my opinion, away from character people. It's how much money you have, how much stuff you have, what you can give them, as opposed to character. They don't care about the character if they can get something from you.
Yeah, that is correct. That is correct, as they would say on Jeopardy. Mr. Charles, the phrase character for men, have you heard that much lately, sir?
No, I have not. Kind of go with what Mr. DeMaurice mentioned about individuals looking for what can you do for me or why do I need you, that type of thing, which is really sad.
Yeah. It is. It is sad because without a good character, how can you be a good man? I want to tell you a little story, something I came across. It's funny because when I read this, it kind of took me back years ago. When Shaquille O'Neal, years ago, was walking. Actually, he had was walking around, but he had $1 million contract, a $40 million contract with Reebok. And he was walking. He didn't say where. Let's just say he was walking in a mall. And a lady walked up to him and called him a motherfucker for charging young kids so much money for his sneakers. And he said to the lady, I don't make the prices. And he reached in his pocket and offered the money they had in his pocket, which was $2,000. And she smacked the money out of his hand and asked, why don't you motherfuckers make sneakers that's affordable for kids? Now, when I read this, I said immediately, this has to be a sister, bro. Because she's smacking money out of my man's hand. She probably picked it up, too, and it fell on the ground. Let me stop. But anyway. Shaquille O'Neal's character kicked in, and he canceled his contract with Reebok, and he immediately started his own brand with Walmart, started selling sneakers from $19 to $29, and sold over $400 million. Now, I remember these sneakers in general. At the time when I purchased a pair, I didn't know the background, how it came, but I remember buying a pair of these sneakers for $29, and to me, they were stylish, they were comfortable, and I thought they were strong. I didn't even realize they sold $400 million, but I wanted to salute Shaquille O'Neal because this brother right here basically went back and pulled the character that was instilled in him as a man, basically through his upbringing. I remember correctly, his father didn't raise him. His mother married another gentleman. I think they call him the general, and he raised Shaquille O'Neal. But he went in and he grabbed his character. where so many others basically would have voided that character or don't even know it exists in them. We know cats now that have sticker contracts, they can care less. So I wanted to spend a little time talking about Shaquille O'Neal first, how he dealt with this when the lady basically, you know, brought it to him about the sinkers being high, and just the character of a man such as him to basically walk away from $40 million and say, you know what, I'm going to do something different. I'm going to do something right. I'll come to you first with this, Mr. Charles.
Yeah, I think it's noble on his part, but I think he's been a person that knew what it was like to not always have everything you wanted. Not saying that his life was horrible, but he knew that everybody, didn't live on the high end of the spectrum when it came to wealth. And to hear a woman literally call him out and tell him basically in so many terms, and you read between the lines, that I like your shoes, but they cost too damn much. And my son would like to wear them, but we can't afford them. And for him to change up like that says a lot. And two, if you know anything about, depends on how you grew up, but I was always taught that, you know, millions are millions, right? Even if you start off making them because you charge a high end for something, or if you can make millions of dollars through quarters, bro, still a million. That's what I was taught a long time ago. So if he could see how the foresight to present sneakers that he had made to kids that could afford them, kids are going to buy the sneakers anyway because of the fact that they're cheap enough, and also the fact that they realize who they're coming from. And that's what a lot of people don't understand. You can always make more money, but sometimes you have to ask yourself how much is enough. And I think from time to time he's shown some things Shaq has when it comes to certain people. I mean, that I would agree with everything he does, everything he says. But he's done, I think he's more in the positive in my mind than he has been in the negative sense.
I'm going to throw a name out real quick before I come to you, Mr. Big Maurice. John Thompson, the old college basketball coach of Georgetown. And I've always looked at John Thompson as being like the father of college basketball. I remember he had Alonzo Mourning, Allen Iverson, all these cats. And I always looked at where he basically instilled some things in them. They may not have gotten out of their childhood, but he kind of nurtured them, protected them, and brought them along as young men when they decided to go to Georgetown. And then I saw a special one time. It was based on Nike, how Nike was trying to get young African males to buy their product, to buy their sneakers, and to basically find a way to get to the urban community, so to speak. Well, they went to college basketball coaches, and George Thompson was one of them. And I'm not blaming him for this, but they put money in his pocket to make sure anybody that walked on the Georgetown campus and played basketball had to wear their product. And these cats weren't getting nothing but free sneakers. So what they wanted when the young men that are playing basketball, Iverson, Mourning, the other, I can go on countless names, would see them playing basketball and then run them to the stores to buy the sneakers that they couldn't afford. So when you hear of such, of Shaq doing this, and I agree with you, Mr. Charles, so some things that he's done or he does sometimes now, I'm not a big fan of, but the mere fact there was a time in his life that I can speak of and salute him for that he made the right decision and the right choice in my eyes, you know, stands tall. And I have to admit, when I saw that Mr. Thompson basically did that with the sneakers, I lost some respect for him. I admire what he brought to the court with men, but I lost some respect because that sometimes doing the right thing may not be monetarily the right thing to do. But I look at it when it's doing the right thing for your people, because to me, the lady, when she basically smacked the money out of Mr. Shaq's hand, she didn't have to say it, but she was speaking for black kids that can't afford it, such as her own. They can't afford that. There's not a job in America that a kid at that time could run out and work that's going to make them enough money to spend a lot of money to buy what they call shoes. At the end of the day, it's nothing but a steel pair of rubber and the sneakers. And these athletes that make the millions, the 40, the 60, the 80, 200 million, whatever, they don't think like that. So what do some of these kids do to be able to afford those sneakers? You fill in the blank. Your response, Mr. DeMaurice, to Shaquille O'Neal's character after having the money smacked out of his head.
Well, first of all, before I go into that, man, I'm trying to pitch you in a pair of them Shaq shoes, man, because I've seen those shoes.
Bro.
I'm trying to pitch you in a pair of them shoes. Because I knew how we grew
Let
up. We had to have the Pro Kids and the Converse.
Bro.
We had to have the top of the line. And you in some Shaq shoes? Come on, bro. I'm trying to pitch you that.
I'm gonna tell you like this, man. If you had the tongue lashing my father gave me when I asked him to buy me a pair of Nikes, and back,
right.
And it was only $33. After I got there and I got that explanation, I've never spent money on Nikes that much.
Well, it's commendable that he did that, and I think he took a page out of Stephon Marbury, who's from Coney Island, who came out with the Starberries. Wanted to make the shoes affordable for young kids in urban areas. But, yeah, and I agree with both of you. I haven't always been a big fan of Shaquille O'Neal and some of the things he says, some of the things he's done. But for him to have that in his conscience and do that, walk away from a big contract from Reebok because he was one of Reebok's big, you know, product seller and start his own company and put it in stores where folks can afford it. That's very commendable. That's very commendable. And you're the only person, I have to say, you're the only person I know who bought them shoes. You're the only person I know. I've never seen them shoes. People buying them. I don't know who the millions of people who bought them, but you're the only one I know who bought that shoe.
I'm
and the Starberries.
Nobody
bought the Starberries either.
I'm on the 400, and I'm proud to be. I'm one of the 400. I'm going to come back to you with this, Mr. DeVries, because we're talking about character of men. You know, you and Mr. Charles basically knocked it out of the park with that already. And it's interesting because we know in our generation as we speak now, in the dating realm, there are plenty of women looking to marry men. They just are. And Mr. Charles touched on a lot of things that they're looking for. But they're not looking for, you very seldom hear them speak on character of a man. So it makes me wonder, it makes me ask, are they even paying attention to the character of a man, Mr. DeMaurice?
Not really, man, not really. And I think I turned you on to this cat a few months ago by the name of Kevin Samuels, who interviews all these women on the show. And all these women want what they call, quote-unquote, high-value men, and these men have to make six figures. And what he kind of exposed in these shows is that, you know, they want this type of man, but they're not high value women. You know, they want the guy and they're not bringing anything to the table. And so it seems like in today's society, if you don't have the six figures, you don't have the car, you don't have all this other stuff, most women won't even take a look at you. And so it's gotten to the point where it doesn't even matter to them as long as they can get the material things in life and be taken care of the way they want to be taken care of. It's okay for them. And so the character is out the window. No matter how bad he treats them, no matter what he does, whatever, that doesn't matter as long as she has the financial, you know, part of it to overlook that. That seems to be more important than the character of the person. It's not until everything hits the fan or they get in trouble or they figure out that, you know what, I'm getting hit upside my head, I'm getting abused and all this other stuff, then they start thinking about character. By that time, you know, they're all used and abused, and then what can they bring to somebody who has the character? Why would they want them at that particular point? It may be too late for some of those women. So, yeah, in this day and time, man, it's like that doesn't even matter if you have any character. And I'm not saying to all women. I'm saying to a lot of the women out there, you all are on social media. You see what's going on in society and in television shows and in movies and things of that sort. If you're not making the cash, if you're not driving the luxury vehicles, if you can't wine and dine them and take care of them, then for a lot of women, it's like, okay, I'm looking for that, and I can look past any kind of a bad characteristics that this person has because I can get what I want materialistic-wise.
Something you agree with, Mr. Charles, that basically, I know they're not speaking and saying it. I don't even know if they know the word character, to be honest with you. But are they paying attention to the word character when it comes to viewing a man?
I'm not going to throw anybody under the bus, all the ladies. I think some of them are, but I think some of them are frustrated because they may say they have, it's been very difficult for them to find a man of character, so oftentimes they may settle. But there, I do agree with DeMaurice that there are some people or women that initially just go, if he has has the means, financial means to provide for me, then I can deal later on with the scenario with just having everything when I want and not worrying about how I'm treated. Because materialistic things for some people, unfortunately, make them forget what's really going on with them. And when I see that and I think about that, I just kind of go, wow. But it does happen. It does happen. But I still think there's some women out there that want high quality and carry men with character. But I say this all the time. It hurts my heart because I think that there are so many single women and single men that are good people, but they're like ships in the night, and they keep missing each other at the same damn point. You know, you hear that. It's almost like a broken record. It's certain people say what they want, and then it's like, well, how in the hell can't these people get together? Everybody can't be bad, but getting back to your point, I don't think everybody's super bad, but I think that there are some out there that just kind of go with the flow. He has cash. I'll worry about the rest of it later on.
Let me come back to you with this, Mr. Charles, because DeMaurice said they're looking for six figures for the most part. And, you know, I watched, Mr. DeMaurice, I watched when you sent me that gentleman, I watched. And I watched a little bit, and I kind of stopped because, to me, I understand what he's going and what he says, what he's doing makes some sense. But it's almost like he was kind of picking on them in a sense, and I just didn't want to kind of keep watching and paying attention to that because some of the women that he was putting up there, to me, it's obvious they were flaky. They weren't that smart. I'm just speaking on what I saw. But I want to approach the idea of wanting someone with six figures. So what makes you think, what is inside of you and that you feel that you represent, that you bring, that says to you, I must be with someone with six figures? When you hear that, Mr. Charles, what must they be thinking that they're offering that they have equals six figures?
Well, I think, one, a lot of them think about the physical, their appearance, their beauty, perhaps maybe their, you know, whatever, their charisma, people that they know, their class, the way that they carry themselves. I think it's that. And then it's almost as if they're a prized possession. So therefore, a man of so-called that stature wants to have a woman that has class and things of that nature. May not have any money, but she has things that would make him look good on that end. And I think that's what a lot of people feel. Well, he does have me. I can help him grow his businesses or whatever it may be. She can do these other things. And they sometimes think that that's worthwhile of having a gentleman of a six-figure salary.
I'm going to come back to you real quick with this, Mr. Charles. It's going to sound harsh to some people, but I'm just thinking as I'm listening to you say this. It's interesting because you said that she might help him with his business. If she ain't got one, how could she help him with his? But realistically, what is the difference what you just said, you know, she feels because of her body and this and that, it all represents six figures. What is the difference between that and prostitution?
Well, I'll say this. Prostitution, I guess, it, to the point where a woman will never feel like she's respected. The woman that does come another way, she's going to feel like she deserves to be respected. I mean, most men, when it comes to prostitution, it's I meet you here, and we do what we do. It's a scheduled time, and I'm gone. These women oftentimes are the wives or whatever, significant others, and they hang around. So they see them on a day-to-day basis compared to where prostitution is a scheduled moment, a time, or, okay, see you next week. This is what we do when we're done. There's nothing added to it. Now, you make the decision that what's the difference between that? There's not a day-to-day usually connection. This is a scheduled time, an appointment. Move on with your life. See you next time.
But here's the connection. Here's the connection. You're right. Prostitution, you set it up, you bang the bang, it's over. Only one of the major difference, if there is, with that and with the, because the prostitute is doing the same thing. She's dressing a certain way. She's giving you an idea that I am worth you spending this, have to spending this to get this for a certain period of time. The connecting thing to me is that if you're looking for six figures and basically all you're presenting is your body, you're just saying if you got six figures, you don't have to have this for a certain period of time. You can have it basically all the time, revolving. So there's the hedge pin to me, because you're still basically presenting your body. A prostitute says, hey, I'm going to give you an hour. This chick says, make me your wife, and I'll give you this all the time. Same two questions for you, Mr. DeMaurice. Basically, you know, what is the difference when as far as it comes to prostitution? And basically, what are they offering? And that may sound harsh. If those that make it does, I mean, believe it does, you have your right to your opinion. But maybe sometimes we look at things a little differently. Maybe you see the point. But what are they offering, Ms. DeMaurice, when basically if they're just standing there, let's be honest, with tits and ass and saying, I want six figures?
Well, the difference is one of them have a legal contract, which is a marriage license, and the other doesn't. That's basically the difference right there. And when I'm watching those shows, and I watch quite a bit of them, and when he asks, what are you bringing to the table other than your body? And, oh, making them feel supported and loved, they can't give an answer. So you got to bring something more than your body or your time and your talent. So if you're not coming to the table with anything, to enhance that man, because, right, if you're making six figures and that's what you're paying for, what's the sense on getting married? What's the point on getting married where you could just buy that time, buy that affection you need, and then go on? So you got to build a connection. You got to build a friendship. You got to build a partnership. You got to come to some things on the table where that man feels like, you know what, I need this. I need this person in my life. I need, this is my friend, this is my confidant. And so, but most of them that I saw, and I've watched quite a few videos on the show, they do not have an answer for that on what they bring to the table to deserve a man making six figures or a high value man. The other thing is that when I see that, all those women talk about, I deserve this, I deserve that. They're coming to the, instead of coming to the table with something, they're coming to the table with baggage. So they expect, say they're single moms and they have two or three kids, they expect the man with the six figures to take on those three kids and them and do things that the other man that they had the kids with wasn't doing. So what will make that man say, you know what, I made all this money over the years, I'm just going to take care of, you know, you and the kids and all that, and be the Prince Charming. They're not thinking about that. They think about, you know what, yeah, I made this mistake, but, yeah, this comes with the package. You know, I deserve this. I feel that I deserve this. I, you know, I'm a woman of this, that, the other, and I deserve this. And it's not really thinking of reality now. You're not thinking of reality now, and now you're expecting someone to say, who wants his own kids, and don't want to go through the drama of the baby daddy and all that other stuff. Now you're asking him to forget all that. I deserve this. I'm bringing my time and talent. And so you can, you know, I deserve you as this man who's worked and gained all this capital, when there are other women who don't have that baggage that are out there that he can choose from. And he's going to just wipe them away and just choose you. So what are you bringing to the table? And most of the women that I've seen on the show, and most of the women that I've talked to that, you know, are friends, associates, or talking, trying to get a man, and you try to help them understand this, and they don't want to see it. They don't want to see that, you know, that's a lot of baggage to bring. And why would he want that when he can get somebody who's single, who's younger, who have things that they could bring to the table other than their time and their quote-unquote talent, and can enhance that man and help him further along and build, instead of kind of bringing him down and him using his resources. Because I've been married. I've had a stepchild. You are investing into something that may not, you know, be to your benefit as a person taking care of a stepchild. Because, you know, I don't want to say throwing the money away, but you ain't getting that money back. You're taking on somebody else's child that you're investing in, that there are no dividends. There's nothing coming back. That child is eating your food. They're staying under your household, lights, gas, stuff. It ain't coming back. And so you're doing what that first man didn't do, but you're expected to do more for that child than the first man. And so I can't see where there are some women feel like they deserve that type of man when, you know, they're coming in with a lot of baggage instead of some stuff they can bring to the table that actually help the relationship.
I'm going to commend you for doing what you did when you got married and married a woman that had a child, because that's not easy, bro. That's not easy. I remember years ago, I was dating someone. She had two kids and was very fond of her, very fond. And I didn't mind the fact that she had two kids, but the son was unruly. And I said to myself, Mark, are you willing to really step in and handle this full time all the time? And my answer was no. And for that, I moved away because, like you said, that's a commitment. That's an investment that you must step in. And his father was around, who was an idiot. And maybe I should have, but I looked at it and I said no. So I commend you for basically stepping up and standing in. But I want to flip this just a little bit, because some of these women didn't get there by themselves. And how they got there is because as men, we have built their heads up because of their bodies. We made them feel like they're superstars and they're celebrities if they're walking around with an ass that's popping. We look beyond, in some cases, what they actually can bring to the table because we're trying to get them to open their legs. So they kind of feel now that that's what we, because we're hunters, that's all we hunt for. They don't stop and think that, yeah, that's part of the hunting list. And that probably is high on the hunting list. But there's some other things on other levels that when we're hunting, we're looking for. And if you don't kind of move into those other levels, we'll choose you for that level and maybe play for a while, but that's not there. So I'll come back to you, Mr. DeRice, with this one. What role do we play where they got it stuck in their heads now is that if they unbutton their shirt, they wear some pants that show or wear something that shows the molding of their body, that's enough.
We sexualize women to feel that that's all a man wants. As long as you do that, that's all a man wants. And so I think we talked about this offline, or we talked about this on a sports show, about how the rap game is flipped so crazily. So it used to be the rap game was the male fantasy. You saw every rap video before, maybe about 5 or 6 years ago, they had to have the women dancing. That's what the success was. You had a woman on your arm, two or three on your arm. You going to the clubs, you throwing up, you making it rain in the clubs and all this. You had the women dancing in the videos, all the video vixens, things of that sort. And so what the women that are doing now, you got Cardi B, who is a former stripper, things of that sort. She's a dance. She's taking the male fantasy and said, okay, if this is what you want, I'm going to flip it in rap, and I'm going to make you pay for it. If this is what you want, you're going to have to pay for it. You're going to have to pay top dollar for it, and I'm going to be on the top of the rap game. And then all of a sudden you see Doja Cat and Megan Thee Stallion, all of them kind of sexualizing hip-hop to the point where you still got the guys throwing the dollars up in the air, but now they're paying for the music. They got to see the videos. They got to see women act like this. They value women that act like this and that are sexualized and things of that sort. So now the women like Cardi B and all of them, they have set the price higher for if you want this, then this is what you're going to have to pay to do this. So it ain't all their fault. It's our fault and our sexual appetite of what we want to see. And now what you see now is the OnlyFans. Remember OnlyFans a couple of weeks ago? They said, you know what, we're cutting out all explicit, you know, material on our site. These women had a fit because they weren't making any money. And then OnlyFans this week said, you know what, we're gonna back up on this. Yeah, you can do all the stuff you want to do, because they realized that this was money. This is how they're making money. And we do that. We pay, you know, I pay for a lot of dumb things in my life, but I ain't paying for no OnlyFans to see you necking on pictures. I'm just not doing it. And so, but you got a lot of guys out there who sexualize women, who want to see this, and you got a market, and women are using this market. OnlyFans popped up during the pandemic. And you know why you don't have a lot of women working in the field now? They're on OnlyFans making their money. They ain't got to come in and get minimum wage. They get a guy to subscribe month to month to show them naked pictures of themselves and be my exclusive fans, and I'll send you a little note saying how much I appreciate you and make you feel like you're the only one and all that other stuff. They're making money that way. So we sexualize women to the point where this, we will pay top dollar just to look at a picture, just to get a note from you in the DM. And so they have set the price. They have set the price so high sometimes that they feel like this is worth gold. You're going to pay a high price for this. And if you ain't on this level, you can pay me, then I don't have anything to say to you, or I don't even have to acknowledge you.
I read a story early on in the pandemic. It was this married couple. They had two kids. And they couldn't get to their job. They were working from home. And the wife wanted to go on that, the OnlyFans or whatever it's called, bro. And she started bringing in 100 G's a month. The husband said, I'm quitting my job. They quit their jobs. And he basically works the camera for her to be on OnlyFans, whatever it's called. 100 G's a month. I'm sorry, yeah, bro. I find better things to do to spend my money on than to look at somebody naked. I don't understand. I don't get it. I just don't. I remember coming up, you know, when we were younger, you had to search and find. When I say search and find, to find a place there, you saw a stripper, bro. There was only certain nights they would have them. It was like, and if you found the spot, it was way in the back. You had to go through a couple of doors, go walk around a big bouncer to kind of get in. You just couldn't just to get in. So, I mean, I told you the story about that cat, you know, a long time ago when they were sharing them on. But you look at now, and back then, realistically, strippers were a lot of women that were basically at that time, believe it or not, they were in college, and they were stripping to basically pay their way through college and pay their tuition and have extra money. It was something that sometimes that's just something things that women, the majority of strippers, that's who they were at that time. I will say this, society, I'm going to say more or less hip-hop world itself, the rap world has taken hip-hop, not hip-hop, it's taken stripping and made it a leap, bro. Long before Carly B came along, they made it desirable. When you got old, fat, sloppy woman out here trying to twerk and drop it like it's hot, something's wrong, bro. Something's wrong. But when you look at, here it is. When you look at men that basically says, I'm chasing this, I will give you this, I will do this, I will pay for your hair to get done, I will pay to get your feet done, I'll pay for your nails. If you can act this way and portray yourself this way, hell yeah, we have done that to get them to act this way. We have, because we have basically said to them, for the most part, that's all you are to us. If you give that, that's enough. Just give me that. That's all I need. And they have thought in their minds, hey, if I can basically show I am worthy of that, I'm worthy of the six figures. I'm entitled to it. Because they're looking, like you said, they're looking now and seeing these other women basically, I mean, you look at Carly B. I mean, I'm for her success, the way she's moved herself, how could you not basically go back and go, hey, pat her on the back? Because where she came from to where she is now, you get it. But realistically, there's a sense of ignorance about her, in my opinion. But you have women that want to follow that same role. They want to act that ignorant. They want to act this way. And it's like like you said earlier, they believe they deserve it. It's a rite of passage. And I'm sorry, just because you're walking around with something that most men desire and may want doesn't mean to me that you're entitled to six figures. It just doesn't. And it's sad that you believe such, but it doesn't. It doesn't equate. But they think what they're walking around with, what they're possessed, and it's here again, we have helped them to feel this way. Because there's been some women that we know ain't worth it. We know ain't worth it. But we chased them anyway because we wanted what they were walking around with. Mr. Charles, are we somewhat to blame for what they're feeling and what they're saying?
I would say yes, we are somewhat to blame. But with this modern-day technology and whatnot, I know a lot of these ladies that are doing these things, they do it because there's an audience. And as Diva Reed said, there's an audience for it and people are paying for it. And I'm like you. I mean, I don't know. I can only speak for me, though, that, you know what, I never was a porn guy about the pic. I'm about to tell say some things about watching, looking at pictures and stuff. If I can't catch it, bro, it's a problem. You feel me? It's something about magazines and things don't work for it, bro. So if I can't see it in person, I can't trust somebody, I can't pay you, for real. You know, and I've been to the strip club and whatnot, but at least I had a visual that was in front of me. But buying magazines and watching YouTube channels or whatever they doing and TikToking and knee-knocking and whatever hell you call it, whatever. I don't need to see any of that because I'm not paying for nothing. I can't touch it, bro. Or at least think I can touch it visually, you know. So, but to coming back to the point, there's an audience for that, and that's why it's doing well. That's why the Kardashians have done what they've done after the way that started, and now these other ladies are doing that too, and they feel like, you know, there's always some men that just are. They like that stuff. And it almost seems sometimes that the more money certain people have, the more bizarre some of their sexual appetites are. So money is no object to them. So they'll spend money on something. It's almost like trying to live a fantasy. But the women are like, what you want me to do? I mean, Cardi B was like, you might call me what you want to, but I'm paid. Look where I'm living. This is what I'm doing. And I'm not mad about her hustle. Yeah, if you talk to her about being somebody of a different type of intellect, that's one thing. But we're talking about straight cash, money, and hustle. And she got her niche. And hopefully she is taking care of her business because it's not going to last forever because her body's going to change. Hopefully she is making sound investments. And the hustle is real. I'm not mad at that. I've never been mad at the hustle. I respect the hustle. But on the other end, we just have to see things for what they are. And there are some men that do what they do. They spend money. They have money is nothing. I mean, they have almost like a open-ended bank account. They make enough money, have enough money to take care of their home and their house and whatnot, and then they have play money. And those are the people that spend that kind of money. But, yeah, I mean, the women are just taking it. Some of the women are taking advantage of it because, as you mentioned, if that's how they're seen anyway, they're saying themselves, even though I'm not a prostitute, I might as well get paid for it. You want to see, you want to look, and you're going to pay me for that? Here you go.
It's kind of hard to shift gears from this, but I'm going to try it, my brothers. I'm going to try it because I want to, I love the talk. I love the conversation, but I wanted to kind of veer off a little bit and shift gears and get into self-glorification because that's something to me that I see that's real prevalent and I don't hear anyone talking about. And we talk about a lot of different things and we go on a lot of different angles, but very seldom we talk about self-glorification. And I don't think by not talking about it, I'm not sure we're aware and understand the magnitude of what's really behind it. So maybe we can kind of talk a little about that as we progress on to this episode of When Black Men Talk. And, you know, basically self-gratification is exaltation of oneself when you think about it. Now, social media, to me, has been a platform that not – I'm blaming it for this, but social media itself has been a platform for where people basically go to be over-self-glorified. Now, in a sense, some people say, well, what's the problem? You know, because there's a thirst, in a sense, to basically always want to be talked about revered, looked upon. You know, I'm eating this, I'm doing this, I'm doing that. And a phrase I should see a while ago, I'm living my best life. And to me, that phrase to me, I question a little bit. Because to me, if you wake up in the morning, how more better could your life be? I don't get it. That's just my perspective. I'm waking up, have my health and strength, my mind is right, I can move my limbs, that's my best life. Me doing anything else on top of that is a compliment, you know, but that right there, my life gets no better than that, just from what I'm thinking. So I want to start out with this, and I'll come to you first, Mr. Charles, is that why as people, and a lot of times when I say people, I'm really talking about us, people that look like us. So if I don't say it, doesn't mean I'm not, but I'm talking about us, people that look like Mr. Charles, Mr. Demarais, myself. Why, as people, are we kicking the door in to be self-glorified?
Wow. I could go so many different ways with this, but I'm going to try to keep it as simple as possible. I think oftentimes what I call general folks, right, folks that are trying to get along, have to work every day, try to make things happen for themselves, take care of themselves, and live a decent life, oftentimes feel as if there's left behind. So therefore, there might be other people too that had very low self-confidence or low self-esteem early in their lives. And social media, in a way, allows them to be great or be seen and be the person that they thought they should always be in the past. Now here's an opportunity because you have a ready-made audience. It doesn't cost you anything. And you can be more elaborate, or you can say what you want to. And if you do it in such a manner, particularly on Facebook, a lot of people will applaud you and tell you how great you are and everything. And then from my own stand on Instagram, if you do it right, you can get paid. So this is a built-in opportunity for those that perhaps have had low self-esteem to do that. And then even if you don't have low self-esteem, I think on the other end, we have built pretty much a culture where most people, and I'll say most, not everybody, but most people want to live in a VIP fantasy world. I believe that with all my heart. The reason why I say that is because having been in the sports media for years and being around these athletes and these stars that people just slobber over and wish they could be around just to see how people act around these individuals. And then to watch how the athletes are watching them from the VIP area just really like, kind of laughing like, look how desperate these individuals are because they want to be VIP. And when you think about it, if you've been to one VIP, you've been to all of them. But the people outside the door don't know that. So I think as a combination of things, but I think primarily some people just have struggled with self-esteem. But I also think everybody wants to be VIP. They want everybody to cheer them on and tell them that they're the greatest and things of that nature.
Mr. Maurice, it doesn't seem like it is. There's a strong thirst for to be noticed, to be validated. What is behind that where we're kicking the doors in constantly to be self-glorified?
Well, I think you're right about people wanting to get validated or be liked. And one of the things that I think social media does in respects to this topic is it allows people to reinvent themselves. So they probably didn't like the way they are or like the way their life is going, and they're trying to keep up with everybody else who's lying on social media too about, you know, them doing the most and, you know, getting lit every night and taking pictures of food and look what I'm eating and look where I am and, you know, watching me at this concert, enjoying myself and enjoying my best life and all this other stuff. So it's almost like they're trying to create a life or create an image of how they want people to see them or how they want people to think who they are as opposed to who they really are. Because I think we talked about this maybe a couple of weeks ago. I've had friends who, you know, have their significant others on there and talking about how happy they are and all that other stuff. And every time I see a picture like that, I go, uh-oh, is trouble in paradise, because usually it's them in the picture by themselves, kind of glorifying themselves, trying to get light. They probably had a conversation with their significant other, like, how come you never put me in your pictures and on your page? And who is this person liking your page and all this other stuff? So they'll throw you in every now and then and saying, oh, we're so happy and all this. But those same people who you really know and you're talking to them face-to-face, they ain't happy. Something's wrong. This person is slipping out on them. This, you know, they have, and so it's like, well, why are you putting that on social media? Why are you acting like everything is hunky-dory in your world when in reality it's not? It's like this image. And like I said, I have some of my friends who are comedians or in the film industry, things of that sort, who will post things on social media as an image booster, like they're doing this and they're having a great time and they want to let their followers know they're doing all this. But the facade that they're putting up is to get the image that their life is all hunky-dory and to get a response from everybody. But the thing is, what I start seeing, I saw with Lizzo the other week, is that it backfires. It backfires. You think everybody likes you, and then they see you and go, we don't like that. We don't want that. And then you get all upset because everybody, I guess you call it fat shaming or fat phobia, that, you know, some people are like, I don't want that. That ain't sexy to me. And now she's all hurt and all this other stuff. And I know my pop was always saying about social media, you know, the cyberbullying. I remember me and Pop talking about it a long time ago. He said, what's cyberbullying? I said, well, people are on the internet and they're getting bullied by people on a computer. He's like, well, why don't they just cut the computer off? Don't get on it. Don't get on it. Don't do it. I'm like, it makes sense to me, Pop, but I guess they got to be on there because social media has become addicted. It's almost like you got to be on there every day. You got to let people know. People don't even know you. You never met. You got to let them know that, you know, you are elite or you're glorifying yourself and that you really feel that they're your followers, that they eat, live, and sleep and drink you all the time. So you got to entertain them. And it's like it takes more of your time doing that than really living your own life, because if you really were doing the most and all that other stuff, you wouldn't be on social media that much. You wouldn't be telling all this stuff. You'd be out there enjoying your life. But when I see people on social media too much, that tells me that you don't really have a real life. You're trying to create this image that you want people to think of you of, and it's not there. You're trying to prove something to them that you really even can't prove to yourself.
I like what you said about if you're up there that much and doing that, you're not living that life because you don't have time to. There's no way you're living that life, and if you're documenting it and doing that and showing it that much, because it takes time to do that. I've always looked at it like this, bro. I have two words to a lot of this. Who cares? A lot of times,
yep.
You really just wipe away, and who cares? Why should I care? I find it interesting because to me, you know, I've raised my children to be strong enough to not worry about what someone else thinks about you, what somebody may say to you, how they feel about you. You don't need anything from them. The admiration, if they give it to you, is cool, but if they don't, you're great without it. And that's this theme, like Mr. Charles talked about, that has to be instilled early on in life. And that's what makes me wonder. I'm going to come back to Mr. Reese with this one. Could it be that, you know, a lot of these folks that are up here looking for the constant validation were raised not feeling love, not feeling valued as a child? So now they're an adult. They're overcompensating for all of that, with all this validation, trying to make up for it. Your response?
I think that could be it, because it's like social media takes a life of its own, where you really think that the people that are on there that are following you really, really care about you. They really care about your well-being. And it takes on, like, it's like you have all these friends. You have all these supporters. You have all this love and admiration. I remember I was following this one lady here out of Chicago, and I met her a while ago. And she's a model, and she does her thing. And I remember, you know, and she's a chef also. And she was, and I think I told Mr. Charles this in the private conversation, I knew that she was kind of caught up in this because she's a beautiful woman, very beautiful woman. And we were going back and forth in the DMs, and, you know, we check on each other, how you doing, all this other stuff. And then one day I was checking on her because I think she injured her foot or something like that. And I said, you know, hope you're feeling better, you know, it's a tough break, all this other stuff. And she was still taking pictures, putting on it like her foot was hurt, but she mentioned it. And she texted me back one day and said, oh, can you like my picture so I can move the algorithm? I liked the picture, and then I unfollowed her. I said, if that's what this is, then I don't want any part of it. If you just want to move algorithm, you can find other people to do that. But it's like the important thing for her was to move the algorithm on her page so that she can get more likes or more, you know, I guess when you like it a lot, then you get kind of promoted in the social media world, and they start showing your picture more, it starts popping up more. And I'm like, wow, it's really gotten to her. I guess she gets paid doing whatever she does, and she wants to move this, and whatever I'm doing is not even real. It's just I need to move the algorithms here. That's all your work to me. And so I took it that way, and I unfollowed her. I wish her much success in whatever she's doing. But, you know, it's like people don't want to be cared. You can't care for them anymore. They want your likes. They want your attention. But that they're going to keep you at arm's length because they don't want any. I don't even think people on social media sometimes when they get too heavy in it, they don't even know how to carry on human kind of relationships anymore. It's because social media is not, to me, human relationships anymore, especially if you've never met the person, you don't know the person, you don't know about the person. It's about just moving the algorithms, getting likes. You put up a picture, it doesn't get that many likes, you feel sad. You put up a picture, you get a lot of likes, you're corresponding with the people. And so I think social media could be good because what I try to do with social media, promote the books, promote the shows, promote, you know, maybe a music that I'm listening to go to the music shows, to try to get some traffic on the page so people could get to the shows, get to the content that we're trying to push. Personal stuff, nah, not too much personal stuff. Got away from that. Maybe a joke or two, things of that sort, that's it. But when you just use it because there's a void in your life and you're trying to fill that void through just having kind of these superficial relationships on social media, that may be a problem. Think about the founder who did this in Facebook, Mark Zuckerberg. He didn't have many friends. So he was trying to create a format where he can have friends. Think about that guy. Have you ever seen that guy? That guy looks like he wouldn't be a really good friend. He looks like a boring guy. Created a platform where people could kind of meet people all around and not have to go to the different cities and kind of have human connection. And they say if you have more than, I think, 1,000 friends or several hundred friends, that it's really kind of really sad because how many of those people are really your friends that you really know? And how many are just kind of following you because they show some interest or they show some interest in what you do or they're trying to get something from you. So it really kind of shakes people up. I think we've taken, which in most things in life, we've taken something and threw it to the extreme, and it's not serving the purpose of getting us closer as people to be able to better relations. It has really kind of messed us up. In a lot of respect. And think about the misinformation and all that stuff. It's really messed us up. It's really doing the job on us.
There's some people, man, if it happens on social media, they believe it's real, bro.
Oh, yeah.
If someone makes up a post on social media and say something, you got to fight with them and argue with them to show them that it's not correct. I always use this as a barometer, as a friend, in a sense. And you can have 1,000, 10,000 friends. If I say to a friend of mine, hey, I need you to help me move, the ones that show up.
There you go. That's a true friend. Because I know you got a lot of shit.
Yeah. Those are your friends. Never bother. My boy, because people can act like your friends until you really need them to do something for you. So try it. Just go on Facebook one day and say, I'm moving X days. And see how many of those show up. They probably say they got you. They're going to be there. But when you stand there by yourself to move, you're going to find out, realistically, who are your friends.
I'll be with you in
spirit.
As
I said earlier. Yeah. Who cares? It's sad because another point you make, I want to just touch on real quickly, that human part of it, bro, and communication. They don't know how to communicate. They really don't. And I'm going to talk about that a little later about communication. And that's something that people don't know how to do. People don't know how to straightforwardly have a conversation. And I'd be damned if they could look you in the eyes and have a conversation with you. They can't. They just can't. Because they haven't really been taught how to, bro. They haven't taught themselves. So that's why they can ease into this room of social media and be something that they're not incapable of being in person. But, Mr. Charles, I want to definitely get your response to this, man, because I think there's a part of it. I think a lot of people, when we were fortunate, we really were, but a lot of people grew up not feeling love, not feeling valued. And they could have both parents in the household. It doesn't mean that one was gone or whatever the case may be. Because just because a dad and mom is there, don't mean they're doing the things they should to nurture and instill and love that child. But I think a lot of it comes from not feeling loved, not feeling valued as they move through life. And now they're in a place where the spectrum where they can get what they probably have been searching for all this time, and it's overcompensating for something they may not have got and have picked up a long time ago. Your response, sir?
Yeah, that could be the case. A lot of times people want, as you said, we want to be valued. When somebody tell us we did a great job or how they feel about a loss or something to that effect. And for some people, it's definitely sincere when they mention these things. But as you said, if you have not felt valued for a long time in your life, particularly when you're younger, then I can see why people would go out and start reaching out to receive sometimes often what I would call fake praise. Because somebody hit like on it doesn't mean they really care about you. And it's great to say, oh, I got 100 likes, or I got this, or I got that. But that's really sad when social media has to be the way that you can feel validated. But for some people, they've never been validated. So at least that evening or something, they feel better about themselves. And that's what that takes. For them not to do anything crazy to themselves, I'm with that. But, I know some people are really pumped up about it, but when they said the same thing about calling out for the prayer warriors, because I got a hangnail. Really? Come on, man. The prayer warriors? My goodness. If you see me calling the prayer warriors, I got a problem. I need you to really pray for me. Not because I got a hangnail or I got a cold right now. But I can get through those things for the most part by myself. Don't call the prayer words. It's going to mean something. But it is really sad at this point that we're seeing it. But like we said, the way that this world is changing, we live in a social media type of world. And reality TV is strong as it may be. Somebody also mentioned, I was reading before earlier, that a lot of the true journalists in the world are really angry because now they know that oftentimes, this modern-day society is receiving its news from places that have not really considered, people that are not our journalists, or considered just fly-by-night journalists that picked up a microphone or a phone and made themselves a journalist now. So there's a lot of misinformation and a lot of things going on out there. So it's really sad because a lot of people are lost. So if you really want to feel good for the day, jump on social media and say something that everybody likes or like something and get into a conversation. I think we have a lot of lonely people out there. And that's how sometimes they suffice by actually using social media to take away their loneliness and their pain.
That's true.
Yeah, that is a very good point, man. And that's sad when you think about it. And that is really sad, lonely. That is really sad, bro. And you're right. And don't know another thing to turn to. But, you know, what I do sometimes when I kind of come across something I really want to kind of bring out here, I spend a little time and I research and I go around. And this is what I came up, and I kind of felt this anyway, so this kind of supported what I was thinking when I think about self-glorification. Because itself brings in some problems, and you inherit some problems when you decide basically just to glorify yourself over and over daily, and the time goes on, and constantly looking to be glorified. And basically, in reality, you move away from seeking and glorifying God first. And you may not even realize it, because you're supposed to glorify Him first. But when you're constantly pulling in and trying to yield attention and yield that glorification, there's no way possible you're glorifying Him first, which itself creates an identity crisis, which you're not even aware of. Because now, as we all talked about, you're trying to be something that you're not. You're creating this life, this atmosphere, and you're selling it and overselling it, which is not you, which could come to the point you don't even know who you are. You just don't know. And by not putting God first, basically, you're not fully invested in Christ. So what happens with that, you're looking for validation so much from others and to basically pull upon yourself, not realizing the true validation that you need comes from Him. If you have that, that's more than enough. And in a way, it creates narcissism, self-obsession. It's all about me. It's all about me. It's all about me. It's all about me. So I wanted to get some thoughts on that, Mr. Charles, because I think at the bottom of that, of all this, I'm trying to get the likes, I'm trying to get all this. Where is the glorification for the one that we should be glorifying all the time?
That's a great question. I'll say that I think that, unfortunately, a lot of people get caught up, and I don't want to say as if they're glorifying, that this is like false prophets or something to that effect. But I'll say this, that when you get so caught up in something, and not to use that as an excuse, but I think when you've been hurting so bad and you finally feel so-called good about yourself, people often just get lost as to how they got to the point where they're at. Because you've been hurting for so bad and you've been praying for it or whatever you're doing. But then you finally start feeling good. You're like, man, I'm going to do this a little bit more. Not realizing that without the favor of the Lord, and depending on what you believe, you will be in this position which you're in. So it's one thing to call on the Creator when you're hurting, right? But why can't you give Him, as you mentioned, give Him a little love when you're doing well? Because at one point, you were struggling like a motherfucker, okay? Now, all of a sudden, you made you big time, and other people telling you how great you're doing. You forget where you come. It's like, as they said, you forget where you come from. And as they say in the great Richard Pryor movie, Which Way Is Up? You don't forget where you came from, sucker. You just tell Richard Pryor when you made it.
Chewy.
You can't forget where you come from, because
Chewy.
If you do,
man, what a name.
At some point you're gonna need those people. You're gonna need those people again. And they were with you when you were broke. They should be with you when you make it. And just coming back to the Lord as well. The Lord's always with you. Your ups and your downs. And when nobody else is ringing your phone and nobody else is answering your call, and you feel that the Lord is in the low, I for myself, I know where I can go. And it's all good. So that's why I give that up every day. But unfortunately, a lot of people, they don't feel that way.
There's the problem, do you, Maurice? They're not basically by seeking all that that outside, internal, external validation that they need, they're forgetting to glorify God first. And it creates that narcissism, bro. It creates that self-obsession to where, okay, it's about me, it's about me, it's about me. Your response?
Yeah, I know personally, man, when folks try to soup me up or say nice things or compliment me, and I know they mean well, I deflect it all the time. Mr. Charles, he has done that to me a lot, and I just deflect it like, come on, man. Nah, I mean, and people think it's an act that I'm acting shy. No, man, I know I ain't do this by myself. And that and everything good thing that happens to me, I try to make it a point to say thank you, because I know that without the Creator, it wouldn't have been possible. And I try to keep that in mind, to keep myself humble that, no, this is not all me, because I know I always ask for help. I always ask for guidance. And then when I get the help and I get the guidance, I know where it's coming from. So I want to acknowledge that. It's not me. It's the Creator above that does this. And I remember I used to do that, like, playing pickup ball or playing in a league basketball stuff and make a good play. And I'll hit my chest and just point up like Steph Curry does now. I've been doing that for years because I know that, you know, it ain't me. It ain't me. Anything that I do, any accomplishment I have, it ain't me. It's not me. I can't take all the credit for that. It's the one that provides the resources and the knowledge and the will and the skill to do that. I didn't get that by myself. And so I try to I do a lot of deflecting when people try to praise me for stuff. I think I talked to you about one of my instructors. He was like, hey, man, you're doing this. Don't do that. Just tell me what I'm doing wrong so I can perfect it and get better at it. But if you keep praising me too much, I'm going to get the big head. I'm going to think it's all about me. I'm going to lose focus, and I don't want to lose focus. I don't. And I think that's what it is sometimes. People get praised so much they lose focus on glorifying the Creator and think it's all about me. I've done it. I'm so great. I'm so wonderful. Praise me, look upon me, and give me all the acknowledgement. And then when you get that taken down a few pegs, you get all hurt. You get depressed and you get anxieties and nobody likes you and all this other stuff and get upset. And you're on social media crying and all this stuff, carrying on. So I try to humble myself so much that I keep my feet on the ground and I just keep grinding. Just keep grinding and perfecting and asking for help to perfect anything that I'm doing, because I know it's not me. I know. And I just don't say that just to be saying it. I know it's not me.
I'm going to close this up by saying you have to really be careful with the self-glorification. It may not sound like it because I can only imagine it makes one feel good, you know, makes them feel, you know, all that. They feel nice. They feel a certain way. But you want to be careful with it because it's tough to self-glorify and be humble. And I think a humble soul is a welcome soul. So just be careful. Changing gears just a little bit. I'm going to come back to you, Mr. Nerusi. We talked about communication before. And what I've always noticed, you know, you hear people all the time, just communicate, even in relationships. Just talk about it. Just communicate. Communicate. Talk up. Communicate. You won't communicate with me. But I have a phrase that I throw out from time to time. Communication sometimes isn't communication. Now, I know what I mean when I say that, but I'm going to throw that out to you, Mr. Charles. You, Mr. Charles, and see what you guys come up with when you hear that. Sometimes communication isn't communication, Mr. DeMaris.
I think if you don't know how to tactfully say things so that people understand exactly how you feel, you're not communicating. If you're just talking and not really clarifying what you're saying, if you're just talking at a person and not to be understood, just to be heard, or just to out-yell them or out-talk them so they could forget about the whole subject, I think you're not communicating. But the key part of communication is sending a clear message so that the other person can hear you. And if you can't send a clear message, if that message is kind of distorted, then you're not communicating. You're not communicating at all.
Mr. Charles, sometimes communication isn't communication, sir. Your reaction.
Yeah, that's true. Because you have to be able to, depending on who your audience is and who you're talking to, you have to be able to have them receive what you're saying. And that's what it is. And as Dean Reese mentioned, that it's important to learn how people communicate. You guys have said this before. Learn how they can receive a message. And you can just say, well, I said it. And like, well, I didn't understand that. Well, I was trying to tell you, but you have to say it in such a manner. If you spend enough time with a person long enough and hear them instead of just over-talking them, you literally listen to them, you'll literally learn about how they communicate. And I think that's very key because sometimes, often, people will just say something or talk to be talking without any valid point whatsoever. Well, I was talking to you, but you weren't saying anything. And I think that's what that comes down to, the explanation. Was that James Brown said, talking loud and saying nothing.
I was going to say the same thing.
Talk a lot, but say nothing. You two hit it on the head, but I'm going to take it a little further than that. Because a big part of me for communication is listening. And listening, in my mind, is a lost art. Because to me, you have to absorb what the person is saying, hear it, take it in, digest, dissect. And if I'm talking to you two gentlemen, and the moment you two, just before Mr. Charles said his last word, bang, and I'm ready to basically show Mr. Charles what he said makes no sense, I didn't listen to Mr. Charles. There's no way I listened or copied what Mr. Charles said. I just didn't. I decided early on in the conversation Mr. Charles was talking, I am not going to listen to Mr. Charles. I'm going to basically make Mr. Charles see my point. And people sometimes use communication as a form of win or loss, and that's not communicating. Communication is an exchange of two different thoughts, two different sides. And if it's done properly and appropriately, you can learn something and gain something, and you should. And that's where communication to me sometimes isn't. So people always say, yeah, communicate, talk, whatever, but you must understand there's different sides of communication. And one of the major sides is listening and understanding. Yes, you must present something and present in a clear, tactful manner. Hey, when people say this to me, you know, I said this, but you know I meant, no. I want to hear what you say. I don't want to know what you meant. I don't know what you was thinking. There's no possible way I can know what you meant and what you was thinking. Or don't tell me when I say something, when I make it clear, why I thought you, no. That's what you wanted me to say. Hear the words that are coming out my mouth. That's communicating. Because if you're listening, you're not thinking, I thought I did all that deed of those stuff. It doesn't matter. It doesn't go. Mr. Charles, you know, I remember, man, I thought about this the other day. And I don't know if it was our first or second show. But we was talking about maturity. And I said something. I can't remember. I'm just going to kind of paraphrase. I can't remember. I was saying something about age and maturity. And you said, that's assuming that they're mature. And you're so right. Because a lot of times we assume age and maturity go together. And they're on different sides of the scale. So the question would be to you, Mr. Charles, why does age and maturity just doesn't seem to walk together hand in hand, sir?
Well, I think a lot of it has to do with the individual's experience as a person. And that might be how you grew up, what your experience is, how you interaction with your parents or your guardian, things of that nature. And then any relationship that you experienced that you had. Some people, I would say this, I think oftentimes there is the thought that because you're older, you should act a certain way because you're older, and that maturity should just naturally come. But if you're not experienced it or been in the scenario or learned or been taught about maturity, you can be a child for a very long time. And that works for men and women if you don't have that experience. Because some people just don't know. But we take it for granted oftentimes in society that at 45, 50, 55, 60 years old, you should be mature. And there are a lot of children walking around here at that age. It just is. And it depends on your experience. It just does. And sometimes it takes some very hard lessons for individuals to mature, if you will. It takes some very hard lessons. They have to fall or be misused, or somebody just treats them bad, or they have a bad scenario until they learn how to become mature. And that's very unfortunate, but as you mentioned, becoming mature is not automatic. It goes along with your age. It just doesn't in most cases.
There's two things that I've kind of took for granted years ago. And when I was younger, I thought that everyone had common sense, and I thought age yield maturity. And I was wrong on both of them, Mr. DeMaurice. So why is immaturity going together hand in hand with age, sir?
I think one of the big reasons is that the person hasn't gone through the steps in the development to become mature in a lot of respects. So, you know, I think there are certain steps you have to go through, and that adults in your life help you go through to get maturity, to take on tasks, to reach certain levels, get certain levels of responsibility. I hear Mr. Charles talk about all the time. He must have been a mature. He had to mature really fast because his father needed him to take on responsibility. And so his development was kind of a speed up because of the circumstances and the experiences he had. And some people don't go through that. I remember I was a few years ago, a guy I knew, he needed a ride. I was taking him somewhere, and it was in the summertime, and the windows were down. It was a nice, you know, temperature outside, so he didn't need the air conditioning. We were driving. Now, we were well in our 40s at this particular time. And this woman was walking on the sidewalk. He started yelling at the woman, you know, catcalling. I'm like, yo, wait, whoa. Why are you 15, dude? I said, if you want me to stop the car so you can act like a man and step to her and talk to her, you know, I'll do that. I said, but what woman would want you yelling out a car window like you're 14, 15 years old? And he back and forth, oh, man. I said, listen, I'll go back around. I'll stop the car. You can get out and talk to her. He wouldn't do that. And what occurred to me, he's not mature enough to do that. But he felt, you know, that he could kind of yell out the window at this chick and cold call. I said, that never works, bro. Now, I don't know where it works, but that's not the type of woman you want. And so that occurred to me when we were having this conversation that, you know, he didn't have enough of a development to say, you know, hey, man, stop the car, man. I want to holler at this lady right here. I got to meet her. I want to do it the right way. And maybe somebody hasn't, you know, pulled his coattail to teach him that. And so you would think that certain guys, I know I'm just going to talk about males in this respect, that certain males could kind of reach that maturity level or have certain common sense or have a way about them where they put away little boy things and toys and act like men. But I've always been surprised of men not being men. And they could be younger and older. And it always I always give praise to younger men who act like men more so. You know, in certain situations where they have more maturity in their 20s than I've seen guys in their 50s, 60s, and 70s have. And it says a lot when you haven't really, you've been on the earth that long and you really haven't taken stock of yourself and worked on yourself to the point where you become a man or be around a man, a real man, to develop maturity. And so it's a journey. And we're all on this journey, and we're learning more every day. But there's certain things I think you should have at certain phases in your life. And to be in your 40s, 50s, and 60s and not be mature is like a sad state of affairs if you're a man, to be honest.
I would venture to say that if you're at those stages and you're not, you have wasted your life, bro. You have basically wasted your life, in my opinion. And I know maybe it sounds harsh, but it's the truth. Because there's certain elements of living in your 40s and your 50s and your 60s takes on maturity, need maturity to live in those stages of your life. And if you're not there, what have you been doing? if you're there acting like you're 30, you're 20, you know, and I know some cats like that, just like you. I know some cats are, yeah. And to me, they'll tell you you're living their best life, but when I look at them, I think they're wasting their lives. They are. Because you're stuck in a time zone somewhat, so to speak. Gentlemen, we got about 8-9 minutes, so we're going to go through some questions and kind of put a lid on this. I'll come to you first with your question, Mr. DeMaurice, if you have one, sir.
Are you guys ready? I've been contemplating. I talked to Mr. Charles about it. I think we're going to get the sports show back on September 8th. Any predictions of who's going to win this year's football picks, NFL picks, on our YouTube channel, Chocolate 108.1?
I spoke last time we got together, man, towards the end of the show. And I said to me, I look at it as only being a two-man race. I mean, you're... Pop's voodoo picking can't only last for so long, my brother. You know, and I know you right now. You look at the weather forecast. This team doesn't play well on grass. This team doesn't do this. But your pick. So at the end of the day, I will say I'm chasing Mr. Charles. And at some point, I will take the lead. Your response, Mr. Charles.
You know, it's, every time I want to go after Mr. Mark, he finds a way to try to make this subtle, nice little comment so I won't come for him anymore. Okay.
Yeah, he just takes me and Papa and just put us in a closet somewhere. Like, we don't even matter.
He can't kill you with kindness. Would you know that? I'll just say this. As a standing champion, Puma, you know what I'm talking about. You were there last year. As a standing champion, along with Pops, I don't think I need to make any prediction because the results will speak for themselves. I'm going to sit back. I'm going to get my popcorn ready. I'm going to take my time. I'm going to study a lot more this time because in the past, sometimes I was winging it. But I think I'm going to take a little bit more study because I want to repeat. I do want to repeat. I do. I'm not passing no footballs like boom, my ass on that machine. I ain't passing no damn football. That football is going to stay right where it belongs, and I'm ready. That's all I'm saying. If I'm not ready yet, I'm going to be ready. And just don't trade Deshaun Watson to Miami so I can be even more ready.
It looks like it's going to happen. It looks like it's going to happen.
Yeah.
I will say this, man. Yeah. NFL, when it comes down to quarterbacks, I mean, just looking at preseason a little bit, I mean, you take away the Giants quarterback for the most part, the NFL is in a good position with young quarterbacks, man. Some of these young cats, they're playing well, man. I looked at a quarterback that the Chiefs have drafted, a rookie. His name is Brill, I believe, whatever it is. That cat came on. I forgot what school he came from. I mean, wasn't highly drafted. And if Mahomes go down this year, they're in good shape. They're in good shape. Ooh. Your response to your question, Mr. DeMaurice.
Yep. Yeah, I got to talk to Pop, get him all set. I know he is all set in with his little laptop and his device. He's going to be ready. I know Ice is going to be ready. I haven't been watching this whole summer. We usually take a hiatus for the summer. I really haven't been watching sports. I really haven't watched sports. I haven't picked up a magazine or anything. I really haven't been watching all the sports networks or anything. I just kind of took a break off sports. I couldn't even watch the Olympics that much. I don't know what it is, but by football season, I know college started this weekend, but by football season, I know this week is going to be a rush week or the week coming before the football season. They're going to be getting down to the 53-man roster and coming up with their predictions and stuff. I don't even want to listen to that. So it should be a fun year because there have been a lot of changes in the NFL. I know I've been telling Charles that in Chicago, the folks here are hungry for Fields. They want him out there. Screw Andy Dalton. They don't even care about Andy Dalton. And Nick Foles, they just need to trade him because he's the third string. They don't even talk about Nick Foles. But it should be an exciting year. And I'm looking for some new teams to emerge. So I'm looking forward to it, man. I'm really looking forward to it.
Say what, man. I was watching the Bills last night, and their quarterback, Allen, he didn't play, you know, the other two previous preseason games. that cat came in. I'm going to tell you something. They're going to give the Chiefs a run this season, bro. They're going to give the Chiefs a run this season. The Bills, that quarterback is something else, man. From year one to two to three, but again, it starts with the season start. If I'm correct, the season starts with Tampa Bay playing the good old Dallas Cowboys. We're going there early.
Brady looked good last night. I have to admit, Brady looked good last night. He looked real good.
Yeah, we're going to know early what these Cowboys are going to do. Your question, Mr. Charles. Cowboys.
I'm going to just say this. Okay. If not, that would be Baltimore. Anyway. Now that would be Baltimore. But I would just say this. I have come to the point you gentlemen can say what y'all want to. I'm not really focused on Dallas wins or not. My focus primarily is becoming the defending champion on his pick. So I will partake in your debate and your banter. But my focus, if Dallas wins three games, I'm focusing on defending this title, and that's what I'm going to be focusing on. I will partake in your banter, but that's my focus.
Oh, folks, if you think this is fun, check out our shows. Check out our shows on YouTube. You think we have fun doing this now? Oh, man. This is what I miss. This is what I look forward to every year. This is March Madness.
Oh, man.
These are the top two times a year. Oh, man.
Can I say one thing real quick before we go?
Yes, absolutely.
Can I say one thing before we go? Mr. Mark,
yes,
I just want to know, have you recovered from that March Madness heart attack?
Wait a minute. Whoa. I was like there for March Madness, baby. I don't know what you're talking about. You may want to talk to people recently on that.
Illinois broke my heart.
Yeah, I'm a Fox. I was right there for March Madness. I was upset myself because I should have seen Baylor coming, and I didn't. And I thought about them, but I didn't see them coming. So now I'll take that defeat because I didn't see them coming because Gonzaga, to me, they ran well. But I'm not going to say Baylor bullied them. They just outplayed them. They just basically outcoached them, outplayed them. So, no, I'll give you that one. But that was the college basketball season itself and the tournament was extraordinary, bro. It just was. I think this NFL season is going to be interesting. Yeah, but I think this NFL season is going to be interesting. But one thing got to watch out for, man, NFL, quiet as it's kept, if I remember correctly, if certain players on the team get COVID and you can't play, that's a loss for you, bro.
Yeah.
And you're not getting paid. They ain't playing around this year. They're just like, mm-mm. You ain't getting paid. They moving forward. I'm going to say this about the NFL, man. They're mean when it comes to their business, bro. When they're about their business, their team. They're like, we lost
they about their money.
They ain't doing that again.
Yeah.
Yes. They're about their money, bro. They ain't playing. So it's going to be interesting to see when this season kicked off how that plays a factor because some players now, if I'm had COVID and been out and been back and forth, but I think it's going to be a really good season, real good season. But I think in Chicago, real quick, I don't know how you don't start that Fields, man. I got to admit, even the quarterback for the Jets don't look that bad. That young cat didn't look bad out there playing.
He's
going
to be a player.
Like I said, man.
I said that at BRU. He's going to be a player. Yeah.
Yeah. NFL is in good position, man, with these young quarterbacks, man. As they blossom and they grow, they're in a very good position. Gentlemen, we get together again on the 19th of September. We're going to basically take a cool ride for the Labor Day weekend. You guys enjoy your Labor Day weekend and be safe. And they want to basically step aside for the opening weekend of NFL football and basically have our wings, whatever we choose to drink, and basically dedicate ourselves that weekend to watching college and pro football. And, of course, by then our picks will be in, so we'll know it's really what time is. Like I said, the Cowboys play first game on Thursday night against Tampa Bay. I wonder if they're going to get a dusting or not.
All your banter, Mark. Your banter.
Charles, I'm coming at you, baby. Mr. Charles, I'm coming at you.
start to study early.